Accession number 9428, Reel 1.
Mr. Keel, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your family background, please?
Well, yes, as far as I can remember. My father was a small hotel owner at King's Cross. And of course, I lived at home until I was 14. And school... prior to my mother dying, up until the age of seven, as far as education was concerned, we had a big house, and we had, my mother had a retired headmaster, and we had our own classroom at the top of the house with my two sisters and myself. And from there we learned really good English and French and whatnot. And... When I was 40, my father had a great pal, a jockey, Teddy Wicks, the jockey, and his father was Teddy Wicks, the barber, very famous barber. But Teddy Wicks was a famous jockey in those days, and I used to admire him so much that I said as a kid, I want to be a jockey when I grow up. Well, it came to the age of 14, and I saw an advertisement in the Star newspaper, which doesn't exist now, asking for young lads to become apprentice jockeys and to go to Chantilly in France. I said, that's me, and we applied, and to my great joy, I won. And I went to France as an apprentice jockey. And I was there two or three years, but I found it was a really clever racket for trainers, because the more apprentices they could have, the less stable lads they would want, so consequently their hire and fire bill was much cheaper by having four or five apprentices. But I soon found that there was nothing really in it. You would never become a famous jockey if your name was just Keel or Smith. If you were the son or nephew of any famous jockey, you would get what we call rides, and you would have a big chance. But for an ordinary person, you wouldn't stand much chance at all. Well, after many very nasty falls, which I still bear the marks of broken bones and that, they never worried about the apprentice jockey. Is he all right if he had a fall or the horse fell on him? It was, is the horse all right? Never mind about what the jockey's like. And... I discovered that it's a waste of time being an apprentice jockey, and so I just walked out one day. I wrote over to my father and asked him to send me some money, and I went out and caught a train, got lost, eventually arrived back in London, and I was away from racing.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps before we go on, we should establish when you were born.
Oh, yes, I was born in... July the 22nd, 1893.
Could you go on to describe what you did when you came back to London?
From where?
From France.
Yes. I was smothered in chilblains, and I think was attending hospital for several weeks before I could really walk again, because my feet and toes and hands were so bad with broken chilblains that I couldn't get around much. But when I did, I heard about Drury Lane Theatre and the big racing shows that used to go on there. The Whip, The Hope, they were very famous ones to anybody of my age. They would remember the names of those shows. And they were ex-jockeys who used to ride on the revolving tracks or revolving table, whichever you like. And I thought, that's it. I found out where it was all about, saw them, and sure enough, I clicked. So I became a stage jockey.
And these plays were about the horse racing scene,
The Whip was a story of a famous horse that was travelling across, and they tried to sabotage it. And in the play was the most wonderful train crash. Oh, gee, most frightening to watch this train crash. It could only be done at Drury Lane Theatre. And then the racetrack scene was a wonderful one. With the tracks on stage. I think we were five or six tracks. And shortly, if you want any one or two funny things about what happened on those tracks, I'll be pleased to tell you about them.
Well, perhaps you could.
Now? Yes, well, every horse had its own individual track. It was long, it was about 8 foot long, about 2 foot six wide, and 300 and some odd wheels inside, and over the top of those wheels and going over and under was a very, very strong sort of, what do you call it, window things, Venetian blind. It was sort of a Venetian blind over the top of all these 300 and some odd wheels. And sometimes it was a hell of a job to get each horse was harnessed, actually, into and onto the track by little wire traces and a steel bar on the offside. And sometimes it was a job to get them to start. But I remember one time at the Drury Lane, something went wrong with a horse at the back, and they couldn't get it to start. Well, I was a very agile little gizzer on horseback. I say it was trick riding and whatnot. That though I was in front of the field, the other horses were the back, especially the one at the back. So I just switched round, and so I still sat on the horse, so it was galloping on my track, not moving away, but galloping on the track, and I was watching the stable lads trying to get this other horse to go. And so I was riding backwards, and all of a sudden they got the horse to go, and up went the curtain, and I'm discovered to the audience riding a race backwards. It was rather good. I don't know how it went with them, but I know I was always in trouble at Drury Lane Theatre. All sorts of things that used to go wrong when I was riding.
Was the job well paid?
Well, I couldn't say well paid by the standards of those years, you know, early part of the century. I can remember what I got. We all got the same. It was 25 shillings a week, which was quite good, really, especially if we were touring, because a lot of these shows that I was in from Drury Lane afterwards went on tour, and we were again 25 shillings. But we could get into what we call professional digs that was bed and full board for 12 shillings a week. If you paid 13 shillings a week, you expected them to do you a little bit of washing. So I expect 25 shillings a week was quite good. You'd got about 8 or 10 shillings left over in your pocket, which was as good as £4 or £5 nowadays. So I expect it was fairly well paid.
Mm. Yeah. Were you living at home when you lived in London, or did you...
Yes, I was living at home at King's Cross all the time I was at Drury Lane Theatre.
Did you remain in the theatrical profession right the way up till the outbreak of war? Did you branch out?
No, I didn't. No, no. I first got into the Drury Lane Theatre after I left France as an apprentice jockey, and went in and found this job in the Whip on the stage at Drury Lane. And after that was over, the bug was biting for me to race again. So I went to Aldridge's, which was a big importers and exporters of blood horses, and I went there and I dropped into a job where a man wanted me to ride on small meetings, not under jockey club rules, under some other rules or something, and to go to Belgium. So I went to Belgium and I was based at Brussels. Brussels, I used to ride this lovely racer. The other horse that he got, he only had two horses. The other one was a trotter, and I couldn't get on with trotters. It's a totally different thing, riding a trotter to a galloping horse. So I was there in Belgium quite a good while, and I came the show business bit after I'd had several things in Belgium. I had a wonderful duel with another fellow who was working with me in the stable. I got very disgruntled.
How did that develop?
I got very disgruntled with this man who sort of hired me and said we were going to ride meetings. No meeting ever arrived, nothing like that. I was just a plain stable lad, and I was supposed to have had a room to myself, like hell. Yes, I slept in the stables on a pile of straw with blankets, and I didn't like that, and I guess I was a bit bad-tempered when the other stable lad there got my goat one day and said something that I didn't like, and I said, I'll knock your head off. He said, I'd like to see you do it, and he picked up a stable fork and came at me with this stable fork, and it wasn't going to be a one-sided fight, so I picked up the stable broom, and so we had a set to go, and he kept trying to stab me with the fork, and I kept whirling this big broom round my head, and one time I brought it down just where his head was. Oh, boy, I was lucky. I brought it down where his head was. He just dodged out a second before it came down. Otherwise, I would have slashed it. I would have broken into bits. Anyway. So that was it. Well, I got fed up with that then. The other thing at that same stable, the lady wife there, she was very nice. But I couldn't get on with a man who double-crossed me. And I know one day I was sitting in the stable reading some comics that my sister sent me from England. And I saw Madame coming up the stairs going from her basement. And she said to me in French, Ah, c'est comme ça. Vous travaillez quand le patron n'est pas là. That's the way you work when the governor's not here, is it? So I said, hey, on bas, sale vache. Well, she didn't like that. It was, get downstairs, a dirty cow. And that didn't go well. So I had almost a fight with her husband when he came home. And I said, to hell with the job, and walked out. And I wandered about Brussels for a week with no money, no home, no nothing.
And how did you sustain yourself in Brussels for a
week? I couldn't tell you how I lived. I couldn't tell you. Except that I know I was there a week without, until I met some friend who was in racing. And he said, you want to come to Gronendael? That's just outside Brussels. He said, there's the stables there. You're sure to get taken on as a stable lad. Well, I made my way there, and I did. So I became a stable lad at Gronendael in Brussels.
How long did you stay there for?
I couldn't tell you, except I was there enough to get re-established and then came back to England and dropped back again into show business at Drury Lane Theatre in the Hope, which was a similar sort of racing show to The Whip. Mm.
Could you tell us a little bit about The Hope? What did that
The Hope
play with? What was that play about?
I told you in The Whip, the big thing was the train smash. But in The Hope, the thing, almost frightening thing, was the earthquake. Because it's such a wonderful stage with lifts and things, Drury Lane Theatre.
Yes, you said that the stage was equipped to do these things.
Yeah, the stage was equipped for all that sort of business.
What did that consist of?
Hydraulic lifts. Part of the stage would go up, part would go down. Some of it would go like in a circle if you want to change scenery
Revolve.
Quickly. Yes, that. But the big thing, apart from the race scene in The Hope, was the, what I said just now, the...
Earthquake.
The earthquakes. It was most terrifying. All these houses tumbling down, people shouting from windows, and they also falling. Well, acrobats, of course. But it was most ghastly sight. And then at the end, the race scene came.
The horse race.
And, of course, The Hope wins the race. But there again, poor little silly Tommy Keel was always in trouble. Though I was in trouble in the whip, I was also in trouble in the Hope. The first night, I was amongst the first two horses on the tracks, four horses behind. And something went wrong. Of course, it would be with me. The producers decided that all the jockeys should look very uniform, except for different colours on their racing clothes. But they issued us all with riding whips. Now, a jockey will only use a whip about 15, 16 inches long, because you've got no room, especially on the revolving tracks, where you've got a breast collar on your horse, you've got a steel bar, you have no room to wield a whip, which a jockey can do, round his fingers. So they issued us with these riding whips, which were about, almost a foot and a half, over a foot long. Anyway, they were too long. And I know with these whips on their first night, to ride the finish, you were around your fingers with the whip. My whip caught somewhere in the breast collar or the reins or somewhere, and it bent and flew out of my hand. And so I finished the race with no whip. It didn't make any difference, because I had to be second according to the tracks, the way they were laid out. But after the race was over, which was the end of the play, I was concerned for my whip, because I was issued with it. And, well, there was a big knot of people all around my track and the winning track. And so, being a cheeky little man, I sort of elbowed my way in, and there was the producer. I can't remember his name for the moment, I can at times. The producer was standing there, looking black as thunder, with my riding whip in his hand. So I wasn't listening to what they were talking about. So eventually I said to him, "Excuse me, sir, may I have my whip back, please?" He said, "Your whip?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Your whip?" I said, "When it comes to that, sir, it's your whip, isn't it?" "You little bugger," he said, "I'll kick your ass out of this theatre." What had happened was, couldn't happen once in a thousand times, a million times. My whip, when it bent, it flew up in the air and it came down and it went through an inch-wide slot and laid across the track of the winning horse, which was just behind me, and it acted as a chock to the wheels that would allow the track to move forward. So the winning track couldn't move forward anymore, and I was still then half a horse ahead, and I won the race. The winning track couldn't go anymore, and yes, that was it. And it couldn't happen, I say, once in a million time, could that whip, which was well over a foot long, could go down this little crack of the blind and stop that track moving.
Were you dismissed as a result of that?
No. I was just gently told off, as he said, "You little so-and-so, kick your so-and-so out of the theatre." No, I was still there.
Did you remain in the theatre up until the outbreak of war?
No. I had a decision with the Hope, and then, of course, I think I went out with one or two other minor shows, but got fed up. Racing was still in my blood, and I'd heard of somebody in Germany who was buying up blood horses to ride show jumping in Germany. I thought, just me, it's just what I want. I saw him and told him that I had ridden over jumps, and so I took 13 blood horses. I was only about 17, I suppose. I took 17 blood horses over into the middle of Germany by train, of course. But I arrived there at a place called Bexo near Magdeburg. I arrived there with not one scratch on any horse. I got them all there. And so I used to ride show jumping amongst other duties and stable work. But my governor used to sell horses to German officers. A German officer would give anything, if he was a mounted officer, he would give anything for a English blood horse. So that's why I used to ride show jumping to them.
Can you remember what year that was that you were
in
Germany?
No, I can't pinpoint any year. It could have been 1914, 1912.
Can you?
Or 11, something like that. 2 or 3 years before the war started. Because when I came, I stuck in Germany for over a year and came back to England from Germany. Then I went back again into show business.
Could we perhaps just stay with Germany for a moment? Mm. You said you were in Germany for a year.
Yeah.
Did you at that time detect any sort of feelings which might lead you to think that war was on the way?
No. In fact, I rather liked them. And I used to like the German police used to come round to this village of Berkstow. They used to come round. They used to wear the pickle hats, you know, like the German soldiers with a spike on the top. I used to love that. They used to come round mounted two at a time, and I used to ride all round the village with them on one of my horses. I loved them very much. In fact, I felt very German. In fact, and so I know once I said, "Ich bin halb Deutsch," or something like that. I am half German, merely because I got a half German name, Kiel. There was Kiel Canell. I thought it sounded German. And so I think they interrogated me. Why was I in there if I was half German? Why wasn't I in the army? Something like that. No, I spoke out of turn.
Who did the interrogating?
It was, one of these two German police officers. I don't think they were of any great rank. But they were just, you know, why, if I was half German, why wasn't I in the army? Why wasn't I...
May I ask
what was I doing in Germany, sort of thing? Mm.
May I ask you if you noticed any animosity or feelings, perhaps, of that there might be a war coming from the German people you met?
Was it even thought of? Did they no smell of it at all? No, not at all. No, they were most friendly in every way. No.
maybe then return to what happened to you next.
No, I can remember one little thing. It may not sound funny to you, but it was really funny to me. Was the German officers, of course, very, you know, we are the world. A German officer is absolutely, you know, the big noise. But they wanted to ride some of these horses, and there was one in particular. It was a naughty little horse that, for no reason at all, used to what we call whip out. That is, you'd be trotting along or cantering along in a straight line, and suddenly the horse would zoom over to the right or zoom over to the left. And, of course, you'd lose your balance and fall off. And one of these German officers said he would like to ride my horse. I said, no, it's too dangerous. I said, he's got a funny quirk of whipping out. Oh, I'm a German officer. I said, well, I'd rather you didn't. Well, he said, I want to ride it to show you that a German officer can anything. So I swapped it over. Sure enough, we were trotting along. Simp out from the back of his neck in no time. That tickled me. It really tickled me.
What did you think of the German officers that you met?
I don't think I noticed anything much different. It just seemed a part of life. It didn't... it never struck me. See, if I'd been thinking nowadays of them, because they were our enemy, but in those days, there was no such thing as a German enemy, was there?
No, yes, I take your point. I was thinking in terms of their training, perhaps, or their manner. Were you impressed with the German army?
Yes, they always seemed most efficient sort of people. The military and the police, yes. But the civilians, no, very nice people. Very nice people.
How long did you stay in Germany for?
I suppose I was there about a year, 14, 15 months or something.
And all the time you were there, you were involved in show jumping?
Ordinary stable work and show jumping, yes. But nothing about racing at all. No. So that's when I came back, as I saw there was no future there. In doing that job, that's why I came back to England. And again, dropped back into racing. And that's how it was that I went back to Belgium. And in racing at Ostend. And that was just prior to the outbreak of war, which I think I've told you before, that when I came back from racing, that was 1914, August. must have been the end of July when I came back to England from Ostend, which the war broke out in a week or so. That is when I got caught up in our own army.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we could perhaps look at a couple of things before you actually join up. First of all, were you involved in any sort of military training whilst you were at school?
Not a ha'porth. I didn't even know what a soldier was.
No, nothing at all.
No. That's why when I tried to join on the outbreak of war, my funny little feelings about army was the picture I must have seen somewhere of very glamorous looking soldiers, you know, in tight fitting uniforms with brass braid all across his chest and a lovely sort of hat with a feather stuck in the top of it. That was my idea of the army, and that's all I knew about the army, nothing at all.
When did you first realise there was going to be a war?
I didn't realise it until I came back to England.
There was no talk of it in Belgium at all?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think we ever spoke about it. I can't remember ever talking about it. I mean, I didn't come back for that. I only came back to England because it was the end of the racing season at Ostend.
Can you remember when of hearing of the outbreak of war?
No, I can't remember, no. In the Second War, of course I could, but in the First War, no, I couldn't tell you that I'd got any feelings about the First War, what I'd heard of it or expected. No, I can't, nothing. It's complete blank, the beginning of that war.
Right, well, perhaps we could look then at the way that you came to join up in the army.
Yes, surely, yes. Really. Well, as I say, I was back in England from Ostend, and when they said that it was going to be war, and we had declared war, hadn't we? We had declared war on Germany, and so, you know, and your country needs you. So, so I wandered down to Whitehall, London, where all the activity was of recruiting sergeants and all sorts of things going on. That's at Whitehall. And I hadn't been in Whitehall 5 minutes before I was grabbed on by a recruiting sergeant. And he said, "Hello, sonny." He said, "You're going to join the army?" I said, "Well, I've come down to have a look at it. Yes, I might join the army. What do you want to join?" I had got some inflated idea that a light infantryman was, as I said before, all gold braid and cockaded hat and whatnot. So that's what I said, light infantry. "Right, this way, Sonny Jim, sign here." I said, "This is a horse regiment, isn't it?" "Oh, no, it's light infantry with march about 120 to the second. No, this is a marching regiment." "No," I said, "not me. I've never done any marching. I've been a jockey." So I left him. I wouldn't sign the paper, and I went out. But I was grabbed very quickly by another recruiting sergeant. And again, "What are you going to do, son? Are you going to join the army?" I said, "Well, I nearly joined just now, but I found out it was a foot regiment, and I didn't want that." I said, "I have been a jockey and a trick rider and a show jumper and whatnot, and I know all about horses, including doctoring of horses. So that's what I want to join." "Ah, yeah, horses," he said. "Yes, the Middlesex Regiment." I said, "Horses?" "He said, lovely horses. Do you know, for the first year in the Flaming Army, I don't think I ever saw a horse. It was a foot regiment again. I was hooked into that, and I would have loved for many years afterwards to have met that recruiting sergeant again who said, lovely horses."
Yes, could you describe...